In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Bill's call, honey.
Who cares?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 25, Senior Poll. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Sarah has been giggling about that opening clip since, I don't know, 5 hours ago?
Yeah, at least.
Before we begin with Senior Poll with two L's, as Dave made us clarify for him, Sarah, I believe we have some site business up top.
Also, why I am giggling, this episode you will be listening to on a Monday, and our next episode will also be dropping the next Monday, because I, your fearless co-host, will be in Kansas at a baseball conference presenting a paper on documentaries about baseball. I am hoping that you'll be able to watch along if you would like to. If you would not like to, just pretend you never heard this. But you can follow the baseball conference on Twitter at Baseball Lit. That's Baseball Lit, L-I-T. And I apologize for the service interruption, but I wanted to make sure that I was present in order to cover the prom and Donna Martin's glorious graduation, spoiler.
Yeah.
And I would not be able to do that if we recorded as usual. So thank you for your patience. And speaking of patience, oh boy.
Well, before I get into it, we should also just mention, put in a plug too for a new shirt on Glarkwear. A lot of parents wear it. The Blaze t-shirt, available in a variety of colors. So go to Glarkwear.com, G-L-A-R-K-W-A-R-E.com. And, get a shirt, support the Blaze, support this podcast, and support parents. I don't know. Felt like I needed a third thing.
I'd also like to thank all the people who have been sending us Instagram
photos
of themselves in their Don't Be Such a Squeeve shirts. Mm-hmm. The most recent one featured a very impressive beefy tee sleeve roll.
Oh, yeah.
Well done, sir.
Yep. All right. Let's start this so we can finish it.
Oh, boy.
Both of the episodes we are recording today are, it's not our fault. They are extremely boring. The fact that the two of them are back to back is kind of shocking and just really bad planning on the part of the people that wrote the season. I mean, it's partly not their fault because it was 30 fucking episodes long. However, the next two are so great that the fact that these two are so bad, it's just like, you could have just skipped them. But anyway, they didn't, and neither can we. Let's just do this. Starting with our C story, pouting back to Minnesota. David and Donna read a reminder on their radio announcement show thing about the senior poll so that we know what kind of bullshit everyone's going to be obsessing about this week. And right on cue, here comes Brenda to care about it way too much in clip number two.
Ugh, like this school needs another popularity contest.
Don't worry, Bren. I'm sure you're going to win Dunmore's class.
Right.
Yeah, I'm serious. You organized the pigskin prom, the Christmas trip to Alvarado Street, the orientation program for the freshman buddies.
Brandon, it doesn't matter. If it's anything like last year, all the winners will have known each other since, like, second grade.
I just can't believe that you care.
You mean you don't think that, let's say, 10 years from now, you'll get a kick looking back at the final issue of The Blaze and remembering that your friends and your classmates thought that you were one of the best and the brightest?
Truthfully, Bren, I haven't given it much thought.
You mean you haven't voted?
Well, yeah, I voted.
And you didn't vote for yourself in any category. I rest my case.
This is the kind of thing that makes me glad I went to a school that had zero school spirit, because we didn't have any kind of nonsense like this at all. Did you?
We did, but it wasn't like published anywhere.
Right.
And I was voted either most likely to become David Letterman and marry a serial killer, or most likely to marry David Letterman and become a serial killer. I think it was actually the second one.
Uh-huh.
Never too late.
Yeah. You still got a lot of good years ahead of you. You know true crime.
It's true. We got a lot of knives around here that don't get much use. Get after that. Yeah, this is really, well, I just resent the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get to the more offensive categories, like done the most for the class, fine, but then, well, whatever, we'll get
well,
to
and
that.
Then that list of stuff is so hilarious, too. Like,
yeah. Most naive? How is that a category?
Well, in Pigskin Prom, almost ignited a race war in the gym. Alvarado Street, nobody was even talking to each other, and they almost died in a bus crash.
Yep.
And sometimes they wish they had. And what was the third thing? Oh, yeah, the freshman buddy program in which uh-huh. Brenda did fuck all for Sue Scanlon, who was yep. being bad touched by her uncle.
That's
great
right.
job.
Yeah. Maybe she can be more useful in Minnesota. Whoops, spoiler alert. So when the results are read, some broad we don't know or see wins done most for the school, I guess, because she got everyone in the class a discount at some store. And Brenda is a bitch about it. And Brenda continues to be a bitch about it that night at home when Brandon comes in looking for the school directory in clip number 3.
Who are you calling?
Patty Crawford.
Why?
I promised Steve I'd try to round up some dates for us for Friday night.
But she's such a snob.
Yeah, she did win best dancer.
Rub it in, why don't you?
Come on, Bren, would you rather have won most naive like Donna?
Donna also won friendliest and funniest laugh.
Why is there a University of Minnesota application in here? I thought we decided we'd both go to California University.
Brandon, I'm just keeping my options open.
Just because you didn't win anything in the senior poll?
Excuse me, but I filled out that application more than a week ago, okay?
Well, Bren, you've been in California so long, I think you may be forgetting what a Midwestern winter is like.
And you forgot how many friends we had back there.
Come on, Bren, when do you think the last time Darla Henson even gave you a passing thought?
Oh, about a half hour ago when she and I were discussing rooming together in the same dorm.
Sounds like a lot more than just keeping your options open. You told Mom and Dad you're thinking about moving back there?
Not yet. And I would appreciate if you'd let me break it to them my own way.
Well, it says here your application deadline is...
Brandon, don't you have a phone call to make?
Why would Brandon care who won best dancer as a possible date, by the way?
And who is still named Patty?
Yeah. In the 90s.
It's not Greece.
No.
Yeah, really.
Trish, maybe. Anyway, he's got a point about Midwestern winters. As someone who's from Saskatchewan, they are no joke. And she is being stupid to try and get back at California this way. She's really only hurting herself, potentially. But later, she vibrates with nervous energy. She comes into Brandon's room looking for $50 to process her application to the University of Minnesota. And he tells her to ask their parents for the money, but she can't because she hasn't told them she's applying yet. We will come back around to this story in a minute. But later, Brenda declines to join her, quote, friends, unquote, at the Peach Pit. Jim and Cindy want to talk to her about her sudden decision to move back to Minnesota. Maybe concerned that she's doing it for the right reasons, but they support her or possibly want to get rid of her at the end.
Well, and can we calm down? Like, she's not joining the fucking Marines. She's applying.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. She might not even get in. She might get in and not go. Like, none of this is a big deal. Also, lots of teenagers go to other states or sometimes countries for college. Like, none of this is abnormal or anything to be ashamed of on her part. So, whatever.
Well, but yet another example of them laying excessive groundwork for a subplot. Like, oh, God. They haven't even decided if Darla's last name is Hansen or Henson.
I know.
Someone fucking figure it out.
Might just be that Shannon Doherty's been pronouncing it wrong because she has pronunciation problems. But anyway, moving on to our B story, a once-in-a-lifetime Lakertunity. It hasn't come up in several episodes, but remember how Steve is still in super detention? Well, someone wrote Thumper all over his books, and I'm not sure why or how or why we should care. Like, what is Thumper something? Like, considering how much groundwork they're laying for the Minnesota thing, the Thumper thing comes out of nowhere, unless it got cut in, like, an overly musical scene or something. No idea what that refers to. Anyway, Steve has 2 extra tickets to a Laker game because Celeste and her friend begged off. And remember how Brandon has a gambling problem that he didn't seek any kind of help for in any way? Well, now he's not sure he should go to the game since it might be triggering. Not that he uses that word because it's the past. Steve says it'll be fine and heads off with final orders for Brandon in clip number 4.
Think Datage. We need 2 live ones Friday night. I'm
bring condoms because I feel lucky.
Great, now I'm gay again.
Hold on.
Gross!
Why?
Also, we need to live what I don't. We have to stop. I'm sorry. I know I brought it back up, but I'm putting it down again. Steve then just lets himself right
and
on
is
into
the relationship of that to Thumper is what I would like to know.
Oh,
Thumper's a rabbit.
Would you? Would you actually like to know?
No, sure wouldn't. Can I say anything? Moving on.
So Steve then just lets himself right on into Mrs. Teasley's office while she's on the phone telling the Alvarado Street School that West Beverly has to cancel the school's summer camp, which seems like it should have come up sooner than like 2 days before the end of the semester, but whatever. It's because of funding problems. Brandon gets blown off by that snob, Patty Crawford, because there's bad blood between her and Steve. It's so demoralizing that he has to go for the ice cream. And then Jim comes home exhausted because it's tax time. Somehow, even though the school year is almost over. Brandon tells Jim what he's trying and failing to do at that moment and offhandedly says that maybe Jim and Cindy could take the other two tickets. And Jim immediately takes him up on it. Brandon kind of funnily tries to walk back the offer, but it's too late because they're super excited and touched. And then at school the next day, Brandon is in what is either his most likely to succeed suit or a guys and dolls costume. Please see it in the visual aid and make a call yourself. It's really unacceptable.
My notes read, damn Jankies.
Ah, nice. It is pinstriped. There is a vest. Steve rolls up and Brandon has to tell him he accidentally offered the tickets to his parents and they accidentally accepted and Steve is furious. And I don't blame him. Then it's the night of the game and Jim gets home late from work and Steve is standing there in the foyer at the Walsh house, furious. I've never felt closer to him than when he's super tense about how late they are leaving.
I totally got like, not voyeuristic. What is the word I want?
Sympathetic.
Yes, I guess. Empathy, anxiety about traffic and getting there on time.
Well, especially, Jim is like, it only takes 20 minutes to get to the forum. Complete lie. Total lie.
Knowing nothing about LA geography, really, I just assumed that was bullshit. Like, nothing takes 20 minutes to get to on a Friday night in Los Angeles.
No matter what Clueless told you, it is not true. And it's far, and it's Friday, and it's night. Like, it's already dark out, whatever. Jim is being very inconsiderate, considering no one even wants him to come to this game anyway. Anyway, and then as they're just about to head out the door, that's when Brenda comes in and is like, let's talk about me applying to the University of Minnesota and ruins everything for everyone. And she makes everyone so late with her talk of Minnesota that by the time they actually get to the game, over 100 points have already been scored, which I don't know a lot about basketball. Seems like a lot.
Kind of a lot.
Brandon is told his seat was picked at random to get a chance to take a half-court shot for $10,000, and Steve is all pissy about it, but it turns out he has the ticket for that seat, and he gets to do it instead. So then Steve's pacing, I was going to say backstage, I don't know, whatever you call it, at a sports arena, some hidden tunnel place waiting for his chance.
Oh, that's what it's called, hidden tunnel place.
Hidden tunnel place,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
HTP. He's in the tunnel.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Brandon and Jim somehow get to come in and like just hang out with him there and like buck him up and get him psyched for his chance.
What the hell? He's not getting married. That's really weird.
Also weird, Jim's pleated jeans, which you can also see in the visual aids. He is wearing them with a rugby shirt tucked in because it's the 90s and he's a
and
dad.
And braided belt. At least he's wearing a belt.
Wearing a belt, indeed. Steve continues psyching himself up somewhere. Brandon finally tells Jim about his gambling issues and Jim doesn't kick his ass, so who cares? This is all very tiresome, other than Steve walking out to the court like silently under his breath, kind of psyching himself up, which is sort of cute.
And there's a weird thing where, I mean, spoiler, mm-hmm. he makes a shot.
Yeah.
And then he's like high-fiving everyone. And the one celebrity that they show, apparently from like real game footage, is Diane Cannon, who is Celeste, the actress who plays Celeste's real life mom.
Yeah.
So they couldn't afford to have Celeste, mm-hmm. but they had Diane Cannon B-roll.
I think she was really there because I think he goes up and like hugs her or something.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He does.
But yes,
she
is Jennifer Grant's mother, Jennifer Grant's father, of course, being Cary Grant, which is, so she's Hollywood royalty, which is makes it even weirder that she sort of like sank from view and never came back. She did like a Friends in season one and I haven't seen her since then, I don't think. But anyway, yes, Diane Cannon, they got Steve when he's backstage. I'll just call it that because whatever. He's like, I can't stand the idea of sitting there and airballing with Jack Nicholson in the front row. Like, don't even bring him up. He's obviously not going to be in this episode because I think they shot at a real game. Like they did. They do seem like they have a shitload of people in the stands. But anyway,
yeah, it's true.
This is all immaterial. He makes the shot and wins $10,000. So afterwards, at the Peach Pit, Steve is holding court, basketball court, about his prowess. Thank you so much. He's pretty convinced that making the shot is the first day of the rest of his life. Andrea mentions that she lost her camp job at school because of the funding cut, which gives Steve an idea in clip number 5.
All I could say is 10 years from now, when you have all forgotten what you won in the senior poll,
you will have forgotten what you blew the 10 G's on.
Don't be so sure about that.
So what are you going to do with the money?
I'm going to spend it all in one place.
Cut to. Cut to.
It was the strangest thing. A messenger dropped off a certified check for $10,000 payable to the Alvarado Street Summer Camp.
I can't believe it.
So, counselor, you're back in business.
Oh, Mrs. Teasley, I mean, this is amazing. Who's it from?
Well, that's the strange part. The donor wished to remain anonymous.
You know, you hear about stuff like this, a pure, unselfish gift. Aren't you dying to know who did it?
Someone with $10,000.
I guess Santa Claus came early this year, huh?
They look through the window at Steve telling the story again.
No.
Wah, wah.
Well, this always makes me feel so sad, too, because it's like, this is exactly the kind of thing that he would do.
Yeah.
Like, he's a stunad, but he's, like, a well-meaning one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Poor Steve. I guess I just hate everyone else so much on the show right now that it's, like, free Steve.
Yeah. I mean, he is kind of a dink. I mean, get condoms because I'm feeling lucky in this very episode. Studmania / out of control. But he also wants people to think well of him. Like, it makes sense. But anyway, so that's what happens, and I'm kind of shocked that $10,000 is apparently all it takes to run a day camp, even in the year 1993. But in the next episode, we're about to hear that like 40 people can eat breakfast for $300. So I don't know. I guess I have a little sense of what things cost back then. Moving on. Brenda comes up to Steve as he's telling the story for the 500th time, and Donna tries to save her from having to sit through it, but Brenda volunteers to be bored by Steve because maybe she still likes her friends. Question mark? We will pick this up at some future time because it's not in the next episode, really. Moving on to the A story. Kelly and Dylan are still a terrible couple and should break up. In case you were wondering, yes, they are. So, in her eating disorder support group, Kelly uncomfortably listens to other sufferers tell their sad stories and later at home begs Jackie not to make her go back. Jackie suggests that they find her another group, but Kelly doesn't want to be in any group. Jackie tells her about the eating disorder victims, sufferers that she knew as a model. And Kelly does that thing where she pretends that anyone thinks her eating one meal means that she's fixed, aka the Amanda asking for cookies gambit. Jackie continues trying to figure out what Kelly's issue is with her group in clip number 6.
Are your friends giving you a hard time about being in this group?
No. It's probably because none of them know I'm in therapy.
David knows.
Dylan doesn't.
Dylan is in AA. If anybody would understand, he would.
Yeah, an eating disorder group. That's very attractive.
Kelly.
I don't know where to begin with this.
Well, first of all, look, some guys like that manic pixie dream girl shit, so...
Yeah.
That checks that box, not to, you know, be reductive, but...
No.
That's what the show's doing.
True.
Second of all, if you're not telling him about this, maybe you should just break up with him.
Yeah, that's a great point. Maybe you should. Stop peeking secrets from each other. But some fucking how, Kelly convinces Jackie to let her weasel out of any kind of therapy as if Jackie is not a former model, as we just reheard and certainly should know better than to let her do that. Moving on. Kelly in her very tall jeans find Dylan, oh my God, lying on his stomach on a fucking wall reading at fucking school. You're going to think I'm making this up, but I'm not.
No.
It's in the visual aids. Is
he's writing.
Oh, I thought he was just reading something in his binder. Whatever.
Oh, no. I think he was reading his own writing and probably thinking that it was mad, bad, and dangerous to know. And
sadly,
unfortunately, no one pushed him into the courtyard.
Thank you. That's just what I'm about to say. That's... It's so a look at me, God fucking Dylan. Anyway, she flirt scolds him about not calling her the night before. He was writing and lost track of time. Barf, she wants to read it, but he tells her she has to wait for him to finish, just like everyone else. And he's also blowing off the reading of the senior poll results like anyone gives a shit. Dylan then goes to the Blaze office to hand Andrea his draft, and this fucking thing has chapters, and what he's giving her is only the first, and it looks like about 40 pages.
At least. I was going to say 75 pages.
Well, you can see it in the visual aids and judge for yourself the face that Andrea is making at it. He's like, you might have to cut it. She's like, yeah, maybe. Anyway, she does say that she's honored that he's letting her see it. And then Kelly is concerned about winning something in the senior poll because of her birthday shame. She doesn't want to be known as the girl who tried to kill herself on her birthday. Steve and Kelly try to get info out of Brandon about the poll since it's published in the Blaze, but the juniors maintain the integrity of the process. Brandon tries to make them understand how inconsequential it all is, but it doesn't work. Works on me. Dylan wins most handsome and isn't there because he's literally too cool for school, and the winner of most beautiful is Kelly. And the fact that these are categories at all is absurd and terrible, but Kelly is instantly annoyed that Dylan isn't there to be her king. Birth. Moving on.
Barf.
That night, Andrea calls Dylan to fluff him about what a great writer he is. I doubt it. Kelly comes over with Chinese food. Dylan immediately starts boring her and us in clip number 7.
Ever since kindergarten, remember? You give me half your cookie.
I cannot believe you remember that stuff.
Oh, yeah, I remember all kinds of things. I've been flashing back to my memories a lot lately. You know, I did a pilgrimage down to the old playground. You should do it sometime. It'll get you back to your roots in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
Pilgrimage?
Prettiest girl in Beverly Hills? That's just what I mean.
Dylan, they're taking the pictures for the senior poll tomorrow, and they want us to dress appropriate for the category. So I was thinking it would be really fun if you wore, like, a tux, and I wore a really elegant evening gown.
And how about you wear whatever you want, and I'll wear a bag over my head?
Seriously?
I am serious.
Dylan.
Kelly.
It's bad enough you wouldn't go to the quad with me when they announced the results, but now to wear a bag over your head in the picture? What are you trying to say?
That I think the senior poll thing is a big joke. I mean, that's it. Over and out. It has nothing to do with you.
Oh, well, considering I'm standing next to you in the picture, I think it has everything to do with me. You know, winning most beautiful is not the most important thing in my life either.
All right. I know.
Really?
Okay, let's just forget I said anything, and I'll wear the Fred Astaire suit, top hat, tails. We'll have a great time.
Don't do me any favors.
Come here.
Ugh.
They are kissing, I assume is obvious.
You should have won the sexiest. Best lover.
Yeah. Is that all I am to you?
Oh, you kidding? A goddess.
Okay.
Oh, yes?
So,
I mean...
Go ahead. You start.
Look, writers, you're not going to convince us that they're this awesome destined couple with all of these, like, ancient retconned memories Dylan has from kindergarten and cookies and her stupid boat. We'll get to that later.
Uh-huh.
Whatever else. They obviously hate each other. Yep. They had nothing in common but, like, the thrilling secrecy of their affair. And that everything's out in the open, it's obvious that they're both buttholes and they're not the same kind of butthole. Just break up.
Totally. The other thing is that 2 episodes ago, she was being all pissy because Dylan was still grieving his father and didn't want to stick his thing in her. And now he does. So what happens right after this is that she remembers that she should go get a condom. So she goes to her purse to get it and then makes this extremely weird face, which you can see in the visual aids because I gift it. Like, what do you want? Make up your mind about what it is you want in life, you stupid dizzy broad. God! Anyway.
Well, she wants him to want to pork her.
Right.
But I guess, I don't know, she also wants him to play Trivial Pursuit with her? Like, I don't...
Yeah.
And Jenny Garth is perfectly cute, but I don't know. Like, this entire thing is just like that either of them would have been at West Beverly Hills High School, mm-hmm. the best looking.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm. It's true. The next day, Kelly is putting on an evening gown when Jackie comes in. Kelly didn't tell her about her win in the poll. David did. Jackie is happy for her. And then this happens in clip number 8.
Well, what do you think?
perfect.
Yeah, I just feel like something was a little off.
Well, if you're going to wear a dress like that, you've got to upgrade those eyes. Like mother, like daughter. Invisible eyelashes and pale as a ghost.
That's better.
See, I do come in handy every once in a while. I can give you a few tips if you want.
No, I've got to go. It's just a school picture.
Well, that is what I thought about my high school picture until it got picked up in a Girls of Ohio spread in Esquire.
Ew.
And the next thing I knew, I was modeling in New York.
Well, I don't want to be a model.
Oh, of course not. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But there's nothing wrong with looking like one, is there? Now, what do you think?
That's nice.
I used to love to put your hair up when you were little.
Yeah, maybe I should wear it up then.
Well, it would show off your neck. Highlight your angle.
My angle?
Kelly, every woman needs to know how to hold her head so she looks her absolute best. For a model, that is the difference between $10,000 a day and nothing. But don't worry, we will make you look unforgettable.
So if you're
out faster,
she's making all these faces like, I'm not good enough. Like, you're getting ready to take a picture. It's not irrelevant to be talking about what you look like. Furthermore, you just won best beautiful, like, or most beautiful. This is all relevant to what's going on.
I am best at beauty.
And if you're going to be making faces like that, how about you make them at your suddenly completely out of character mother?
Yeah.
Obsessing about her own modeling career, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a reminder, as we heard in the beginning, Kelly said, how do I look? And she said, perfect. So we all heard it. So when Kelly's a bitch later, which spoiler alert, she is. Remember that that's what she said until Kelly was like, eh, I don't feel finished. And then Jackie started helping her because Kelly's a dank. Moving on. At school, Kelly's in the bathroom primping with Donna and Andrea when she decides to be weird again in clip number 9.
Well, I don't think you need mascara. You have great eyes.
Wrong.
You have great everything. Only if I work at it. Oh, yeah, Kelly Taylor, total card chaser. You have to have meant. My eyelashes are invisible. I'm as pale as a ghost. I have no cheekbones, and my nose is never going to be quite right.
Oh, well, you can
self-pity mouth.
Like every girl in the school went trade places with you in a second. I'll trade.
Let them spend their whole lives trying to look unforgettable just so they can never be taken seriously.
You're being ridiculous.
Am I? I just said that nobody takes me seriously, and you didn't take me seriously, did you?
Well, for what Dylan has been writing, I would say he takes you very seriously.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
You've read Dylan's manuscript?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's terrific.
I doubt it.
Lies.
Okay, a couple of things. Gabrielle Carteris and Andrea both are very pretty, but her eyes are not her best quality, so for that to be where the scene starts from is weird. Also, for Kelly, who just finished winning Most Beautiful in this stupid senior poll, to be like, I don't like how I look, is really, really annoying. And the fact that anyone plays into it at all is shame on them, because they shouldn't. She should quit fishing for compliments. It is gauche.
Can we talk about Donna's hair in the
scene? Yeah, it's in the visual aids.
I love it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's just like this huge Calder sculpture. That's dipped in a bowl of Clairol number 7 and put on her head. I don't know. It's cute. Like, there's definitely this reference to, like, the Minnie Mouse stuff thing that's always happening with her. But it looks cute. I don't know. Sometimes she looks cute.
She does. I'm not crazy
grasping
about the
straws in this episode.
I know. Seriously. I'm not crazy about the off-the-shoulder peasant blouse and choker combo, but the hair is fine. And you can weigh in yourself because it's in the visual aids. So now that Andrea spilled the beans about how she got the sneak peek at Dylan's amazing manuscript, Kelly has to come out to the quad to yell at him in clip number 10.
When do I get to read your manuscript?
Well, I told you when it's ready.
Why is it done enough for Andrea to read?
Because she's my editor, and she's the one that got me into writing in the first place.
Then why don't you go to bed with her?
What are you saying?
I am saying that I really resent being good enough to sleep with, but not good enough to show your writing
to. Okay, I will show it to you, all right?
Not because you value my opinion, only because you want me to shut up, right?
Right.
Hey, McKay, where are you going?
Yeah, I'll be right back.
Kel, listen, I don't know what's going on with you, but I do value your opinion.
No, you value the way I look and the way I dress and the fact that I have sex with you, but you don't listen to a thing I say.
I don't listen to you? Who was I listening to when I picked up this ridiculous hat and this stupid cane? I don't want to have this picture taken anyway.
Fine, we won't take it.
I want to take it.
Well, and don't forget to smile for the camera.
I don't want to take it anyway. I want to take it. Like, you two are just, why do you even pretend to care? You hate each other.
Yeah, I don't. I can't imagine the sex is any good either. Because.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Kelly storms home and has a fight with Jackie in clip number 11.
I didn't get the stupid picture taken, okay? After all that work we went through?
You went through. I just sat there hating every minute of it.
Then you should have said something.
Thank you.
I couldn't. You were too busy putting my hair up and criticizing my makeup.
I did nothing of the kind. I said you look perfect.
Yeah, but you didn't mean it. You never mean it.
Kelly?
You know, when I was 12, it was, oh, of course you're pretty, honey bun, but let's see if Weight Watchers can do the trick.
We're back to that again.
And when I turned 15, you didn't give me a cake like a normal mom. You got me a nose job.
You begged me for it.
Only after you told me I needed
it. That is absolutely not true. From the time you were old enough to read, all you could talk about was beauty and fashion.
That is because that's all you ever talked about. When you weren't passed out or out picking up one night.
Okay, I'm a terrible human being and I've ruined your life. Is that what you want to hear?
No, I don't want to hear anything.
That makes two of us.
Fine, then I will shut up. But first, I want to thank you for teaching me how to be shallow and insincere.
Why are you trying to hurt me?
Oh, God. God, I am so sick of everything I could scream.
You are screaming.
Yeah, it's about time.
Kelly, get back here. Where are you going?
Cut. They make Jackie stand and stare at the slam door for so long. Also in this scene, Jackie is wearing what Sarah correctly has identified in the visual aids as the Jackiest blouse. Sarah, would you like to describe it briefly?
I believe that this... Jackie-ish garment is, it's white with black stripes,
yep,
like in the body of it, and then there's what looks like a vest that, yep, is polka dots.
It's like, I think it's like a quasi animal print, like it sort of looks like maybe,
right,
a black and white,
or like
cheetah,
a weird
situation,
like zebra houndstoothy. Anyway, it's like same colorway,
yeah,
contrast print,
right,
and it's not a real vest.
No.
It's like a dicky vest,
so, and it's
like
not on the back. It doesn't continue on the back, like it's just the back of the blouse is just the stripes, so it's,
and
like,
it's so blousy, and it's that like super shiny,
yeah,
silk poly. It's so Jackie
that she's,
and then
wearing,
she's also wearing like, you know, gold drawer pulls for earrings as usual,
and this is what she wears to like just be in the house on like a Wednesday. Like the silk blouse for no good reason. Yes, Dave.
I was just going to suggest that be called Jackonian.
Ah, yes.
Sure.
It is Jackonian for sure. Anyway, David called Dylan, told him about the blowout that Kelly and Jackie just had, and blows Kelly's spot about the eating disorder group, which she quit. And as soon as he says that, Dylan knows where she went. He finds, yeah, her at the old playground that he had taken a pilgrimage to, and they have more generic high childhood moments described back and forth. But Kelly is too emo to be comforted by their shared history in clip number 12.
So why don't you just do me, everybody else a big favor, and go back to Brenda?
Seriously.
Is that really what you want?
Doesn't matter, yep, what I really want. I'm just a stupid blonde bitch who's not really worth it.
I mean...
Why don't you talk to my father? Never bothers to call me anymore. Or my mom. Probably hates me right now. Or all the guys I put out for in the 10th grade and never heard from again.
Kelly.
Or why don't you talk to Brenda and find out how it really feels to have somebody you trust go behind your back and steal your boyfriend from
you?
That's
me. Not how it happened.
Nah.
It's not even close, Kel. That,
kind
that's
of.
Part of what I've been writing about.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Kelly, do you have any idea how difficult it is for me to share that with anybody? You're not the only one who wants to end up as more than just best looking in a stupid poll.
You are already so much more than that, and you know
it. How do I know it? Whoever tells me that I'm smart or even worth knowing. We are two little kids who had to walk home from school by ourselves because our parents forgot to pick us up.
I guess we're both basket cases.
No. We're soulmates. If you hadn't called me that day at the marina, I would have fried in that car. And I miss Jack. I miss him more than I can tell you, but I'm not unhappy to be alive. And most of my life, I couldn't say that.
No.
I care what you think. I don't care that you're in an eating disorder group, Kel. If you said that you never wanted to sleep with me again, I could live with that.
I doubt it.
That morning when I called you on the boat, all I really wanted to do was hear your voice.
You still want to?
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, the bass guitar of the soulmates. God.
Jesus Christ.
You nailed it when you said it earlier. Like, they're both just addicted to the drama. Like, that's all that they have between them. So they have to keep coming up with shit to be dramatic about.
Yeah. Well, and that's high school. That's fine.
True. That's true. Still, barf. Kelly and the boom mic come home to sort of apologize to Jackie. Jackie is very remorseful about everything she put Kelly through her whole life and wishes she could turn back the clock. And really shit talks herself as a mom more than either of us would because we love her and Kelly's a dick. Jackie feels like it's her fault when she sees Kelly beating herself up. Kelly thinks maybe she should go back to the eating disorder group. And Jackie says maybe she'll go with her or maybe the two of them can have some therapy together. And Kelly would like that. And I think that's probably a good idea. Dylan finds Kelly at her locker for a retake of their stupid, most beautiful, most handsome picture, and he brings her his draft to read, and oh my god, then we have to read it, and I want to apologize retroactively for all the times we made fun of Brandon's bad writing, because Dylan's bad writing is so much worse in our final
also
clip.
He's standing like directly over her while she's reading it, like, go take a walk around the quad and eat some Bugles, Jones.
Yeah. You can see that in the visual aids, too, how close he's standing to her, like, practically, he's like Snoopy at the end of his thing, pretending to be a vulture.
I know, and he's, like, bobbing up and down, like, please stop.
With no belt. So, yes, clip 14 is where we have to hear Dylan. Oh, shit, I forgot. I missed one clip. Before we get to that, sorry, Dave. Kelly reads a little bit of it in the hallway in clip 13.
Dedicated to Kelly Taylor. So far, I like it a lot.
Oh, God, of course she does. Okay, now
well,
here
you
is...
stop reading, because it's about to get barf-tastic.
Here is the rest of it in clip 14.
Barf-tastic.
Oh, yes! No!
Even before he noticed her bow. Sleek two-footer she had been given for her fifth birthday a few days before. Oh. She was sailing it, upside down in a large pool that had formed during a winter rain. The rain. Again. In a marina this time. The boats, like the girl, Jesus. Had grown. Beautiful. Inspirational. After the explosion that killed his father, she was the only beauty, the only inspiration left in his life.
Dylan, did you mean what you said yesterday?
We said a lot of things, Cal.
The part about how if we never slept together again, you could live with them.
Are you sure I said that? I mean, it just doesn't sound like me.
Both of you, go to hell.
What a prize. What a prize. Aren't you glad you got to read his boy you script? Jesus Christ.
Meanwhile, inside, Andrea is like, how the fuck am I supposed to cut this down to 400 words? What is wrong with you? No one cares about your boats or your
of her
fucking girlfriend.
In the garbage.
Shut up, Dylan, forever. And then they get their picture taken in the end. Okay. Most valuable player of the episode. Steve, no question.
Yes, Steve.
He sank a 3-point shot, which is not easy. He won $10,000. He did not selfishly keep it for himself or buy some kind of nonsense. Helped some disadvantaged kids and also on a disadvantaged Andrea. So good for him. Least valuable player. Really spoiled for choice here. I'm tempted to say Jim because I'm so offended that he was late getting home before the basketball game. And I'm not even kidding.
I support you.
Also the pleated jeans. But I'm going to say Kelly, who's such a rag this whole episode.
Yeah, she's terrible. I'm with you. It's Kelly.
All right. The Kim Challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to know.
5 ways from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I'll start with the easiest one first. His writing is both bad and dangerous.
His hair, there's absolutely no way he has a permit for hair that tall. It's completely out of control. And at one point, it looks like the Sydney Opera House took a crap on his head.
You can see it in the visual aids. Sarah cut so many pictures of his terrible hair. It's a really bad period for Dylan's hair.
No.
It's important for, like, posterity that people can see and bear witness to what is happening on his head. I mean, he eats Chinese food that's probably bad for him. In those days, it might have still had MSG in it.
He's sleeping with Kelly on purpose? Seems sort of masochistic. That's bad.
We also don't know where the tuxedo came from, and if it was one that he had to rent for this stupid picture, then maybe it's infected with bees or syphilis or whatever it is in that the urban legend about the prom dress. Formaldehyde.
Also, he's dangerous to know because if you're his editor, you're going to have to edit that shit show down to something people can read.
God, great point, Dave.
Thank you.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. Okay, we're into this chapter where it's just like, it's the bitchiest one yet, and that is saying something.
Woo.
So this section is called Shannon's Beauty Tips, Skincare, Diet, and Breast Enlargement. And this is so fucking mean, you cannot believe it. I'm going to read this, you're going to think I'm making it up, but I swear this is real. Makeup. As performance artist Curtis York commented in an interview in the newsletter, that would be the I Hate Brenda newsletter, which this book is based on in part. No matter where she sees a reflection of herself, be it videotape, celluloid, or plastic Mattel figurine, quote, she is reminded that she is hideously deformed. I think that is the driving force behind the actress. It's that desire to somehow overcome the fact that she is hideously misshapen, end quote. Brenda's lipstick color on the show is her own choice, but we shouldn't be fooled by the natural look it takes close to 2 hours to achieve and about a grand total of $100 in makeup per episode. That can't possibly be true. It is a look she utilizes to enhance her naturally lopsided features, as so many have referred to the position of her eyes and chin. What's the problem with her chin? Eyes, okay, but whatever. Most viewers ignore the eyes and concentrate on the overplucked and clownish eyebrows now. Okay, can't really argue with that. Her eyebrows do get really bad. End of excerpt.
Wow. Oh my God.
So mean.
That was amazing.
Oh boy. Next time I get with this, you'll wish the next episode had gotten cut from the roster entirely when the 90210 gang explores the pros and cons, get it, of senior cut day in mind-numbing, Six Flags pimping, Brandon car-stealing detail. And Dylan dons a pair of green tights that will haunt your nightmares forever. Speaking of nightmares, you can see his sticky little legs and all manner of other horrors in our visual aids, which you can find on our website at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previously.tv. You can follow me, I'm Sarah D. Bunting, at Tomato Nation, and my esteemed co-host, Tara Ariano, at Tara Ariano. And finally, our fine feathered producer, David T. Cole, is at Glark on Facebook. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
I can't believe we went 45 minutes.
I can't either.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.